Hello, and welcome to this very special Radio Today podcast from the Radio Academy.
Radio Today. The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio. Radio Today.
So, welcome along. My name's Nick Pitts. Now that it may be that you've heard my name come up in association with the Radio Academy, where I'm vice chair, or my day job as content director for Jazz FM. But today, we're going back to the turn of the century and the year 2000, where for that and the following 5 years, I had one of the most fulfilling times in my almost 30-year career when I met Jonathan Jono Coleman. As his producer for 5 years on Heart London's Breakfast Show, I had the most fun you could ever have in a job. And it was down to Jono and the various team members I would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be with on a daily basis. Jono Coleman passed away on the 9th of July of prostate cancer at the age of just 65. And although he'd not been a significant part of the UK radio scene since 2006, the tributes and obituaries came thick and fast. Therefore, we as the Radio Academy thought that we needed to do something special to celebrate his life. And it also gives us a chance to get some people like me who were brushed with Jono's greatness in his job to talk about him today. So, over the next 60 minutes, we'll hear from his various radio spouses here in the UK, and we're also going to go to the other side of the world and to Australia. We'll also hear from various people who have worked with him and their own memories and tributes, plus, of course, remind ourselves of Jono's greatness with some fabulous audio. So with that in mind, it's time to get a move on and also tell you that the audio you're about to hear is also the basis of a video that was recorded by the Radio Academy and is available to see in all its glory at radioacademy.org for members. Join today if you're not one already. It's well worth it because for the first time ever, on screen and in sound, we've got not one, not two, not three, but four of his former radio partners together in one Zoom room. From the Russ and Jono breakfast experience on the original Virgin Radio between 1993 and 1997, hello to Russ Williams.
Hello, everyone.
And today we have two of his heart wives with us. His on-air partner from 1999 to 2002 on Jono and the Morning Crew. It's Erica North.
How are you doing, everyone?
Plus the radio wife, with whom Jono won the Radio Academy Sony Gold Award in 2004 from Jono and Harriet at breakfast. It's Harriet Scott.
Hello.
And from his final 18 months on the air here in the UK, she's a BBC Radio London stalwart and Jono's on-air co-presenter for the Jono and Joe Breakfast Show in 2005 and 2006. It's Jo Good.
Hello.
Look, it's lovely to see you all. We were very lucky. We all got to catch up the other night, but we've saved a lot of that for today. Condolences to you all for your mutual loss and the loss of our friend Jono. Now, when I got the news, although I was sort of expecting it, it crushed me. How did you guys feel when you heard it? I mean, Russ, we'd spoken regularly,
yeah,
and you called me to give me that bad news. How was it when it hit you?
Not the greatest surprise, because I was aware what had been going on with Jono and his health for the last certainly year or so. But nevertheless, even though, you know, the express train is coming to hit you, you know, it doesn't soften the blow. And the awkward thing for me was that I found out before it even became public, as you know, and we all did that day. And I think it was about 12 hours, wasn't it, before the news was released from Australia. But I remember just a sinking feeling in my heart, but also a lot of smiles, because thought back a lot about some of the stuff we got up to, not only at Virgin, but elsewhere. So a bittersweet day, really. Just pleased to have been part of his life and career, but very sad.
Eri, you got to have a chat with him a couple of weeks before, didn't you?
I did. It was a couple of days before, actually, I last spoke to Jono. And although his wife had prepared me for the worst, there was something in my head that wasn't quite accepting it. And my last words to Jono were, he was feeling very sleepy in the hospital. He'd been given medication. It was the middle of the night this time. I was chatting with Margot, his child bride, his wife, in the early hours, because I wasn't sleeping. And of course, with the time difference, that's when she was on social media. So we were backwards and forwards. And he said, look, why don't you call now? And I rang within minutes. And in that time, the drugs, the medication he was on had taken effect and he was falling asleep. And my last words to him were, mate, don't worry about it. I'll call you next week when you're back home and we'll try this again when you're feeling more awake. because in my head, although I knew we were expecting terrible news, I couldn't make the connection. Jono was always, when I think of Jono, of any person I've ever met, he was so full of life. And to think of him in these terms, and when we met last week, I was sitting on the train for an hour coming home thinking, what was that all about? Jono's still here. If I pick up the phone, he'll still be there. I can't quite accept it on a deeper level. And as I'm talking to all of you, there is a part of me that's thinking, this is all wrong. What are we doing here? Talking about Jono in these terms. I don't want to talk about Jono in these terms. He's still there in Australia and we can go visit when we want to. So young to be lost. And yes, all happy memories. But still, to me, I'm a little bit of a zombie about it. I haven't quite taken it in, to be honest.
Harriet, you were, if I recall, you happened to be staying with your mum when you got the news. So you had a mum hug available to you, did you?
So I was with my mum when I heard that he'd gone. But Nick, it was you that told me that he was in palliative care. And I think we all knew he'd been ill. I didn't realise how bad it was. And I know you sent me a text, and it's a lovely text, but so you said, didn't you, say, mate, this is not a nice text to send. This is not a nice text to receive. But would you mind, can I add you to, John, this WhatsApp group that's been set up to show our love for Jono in his last days? And I was walking around blooming B&Q. And I think I said to you, I was like, I feel it now. My knees just went wobbly. I couldn't walk. And I think that's, you know, it's because as you say, Erica, this will come up and come up. If anyone knew how to have a good time, it was Jono. And you just say, I refuse to think of him fading away like that. You know, I thought, no, not Jono. So it was horrible. But anyway, there was those few days of being part of that group, which was very supportive. And it gave me comfort, certainly, to think that I think that Margot was showing him all these messages and memories and laughs that people were sharing. But sure, when you get the actual news that he's gone, that the finality of it is horrible. It's just really like a heavy heart.
There's two elements of irony of Jono's passing there. Is one that it was a lunchtime on a Friday, which I don't think passed any of us by. And you were in B&Q, and I don't think the man ever saw the inside of a B&Q or any place like that. I think it would be fair to say. Joe, how about you? What were your thoughts when you heard the news?
Yes, absolutely. This WhatsApp group, I've always been quite cynical about WhatsApp groups. In fact, I find them quite dangerous things and never really wanted to be on them. But what an absolute privilege to be on this WhatsApp group with his friends and his family. And I'd seen him the last time he was in London, and he was so happy that he was in remission. And there was occasions when he had a sort of guarded look, and I thought, you know, something passed over him because he just lived life. And it was as though there was an echo to his treatment that was still with him. And then when it was his birthday, and everybody here, his very good friend, Paul Dornan, asked us to all contribute to his birthday video. And we all did. And then it went silent. And all of you know, Jono, if anything like that happened, it would have been everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, endless reverberations of that video. And nothing. And I just thought, right, something's not quite right now. And I was invited to be on the WhatsApp group. And that's when I thought, okay, this is a sort of countdown. And I have never experienced anything like this before, because it was this double-edged sword of, it was going all night long by my bed because Australian time. It was full of gags, full of ridiculous videos. In fact, somebody, I don't know if it was you, Nick, who put, Jono, this is the first time in your life you've not employed a publicist. And, you know, and I was laughing out loud at all of these crazy memories of his whilst he was still alive. And it was literally, you hear this cliche, you know, let's celebrate someone's life. We were celebrating it in his final days. It was like this gathering storm that just, this WhatsApp went crazy. So when Paul called me, it was on a Friday, and I was driving to my mum's, and I remember exactly where I was on the M23. And he said, Joe, and I went, Paul, I know. And got to my mum's, sorry. Like Harriet, my mum knew my history with Jono, and like all of you, you just think, like, how can a light like that go out? How can that ever go out? Because as we will realise, and because from that group, you just realise how many people he touched. in so many extraordinary ways.
I agree with every single one of you there. I still can't quite believe it myself. And I'm waiting for him to come on to WhatsApp and go, surprise, because that's the sort of thing Jono would do. But of course, this is a celebration today. So we're going to have a bit of fun. We're going to have a bit of laughter about Jono in a second. But of course, from all of us and also from all of his friends from the industry over the years, our love and condolences and heartfelt wishes go to Margot, Oscar, Emily, his two kids, and his sister, Sharon, who's here in the UK, and the rest of his family as well. So from all of us and the Radio Academy, our love and best wishes to you. So look, before we get into our reminiscences and find out just how Jono touched us, our panel here today, many more as well, we're aware that there are some people in the Radio Academy who've heard of Jono here on the UK on air and some who did not. So for all, some to remind, some to show, let's have a look at the moment at the talent of someone who just lived his life to the full and made people laugh. Jono Coleman.
Much more music, Virgin 1215.
What's for breakfast?
Thank you very much indeed. Welcome to the Virgin Newsroom. We're surrounded by broadsheet and tabloid newspapers this morning for a bit of a change. And good morning, my name is Shunker Ghoulies. Edward Sisson's hands over here. Marvellous. Eddie, what do you say we start with the, Daily Star. I say, Daily Star. And the headline there is, Rebel MP pulls out of Mulwinnie's seat at 11th hour. A spokesman for the unnamed MP said he thought he heard Brian's wife coming home, so he grabbed his undies and shot out the bedroom window. He apologises unreservedly.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, boys.
Virgin 1215.
Week at a time.
Yes, we do. We record ahead. I mean, you can't do these sort of shows live every day because the economics of the health.
That's why we pre-record this show. This is actually pre-recorded last December. You're listening to this on tape at the moment.
That's so not true.
That's a galah.
So that's what a galah looks like.
Yeah.
Pink. She's quite like a parrot, actually, isn't she? Very colourful.
She is a parrot. She's a cockatoo.
Hey, Erica, I hear you've seen a cockatoo, haven't you? Oh, you're terrible, you are. You took that completely out of context.
Latest survey into our bedroom habits suggests that men who make the best lovers are the men who also do the most housework.
When I'm with between the cheats with the child bride, I always have Mr. Muscle with me.
No. Very funny. Loves the jobs you hate.
Beckham bombshell. Posh says, I'll see that ugly lying cow in court.
So
I think
about
she's
me?
Talking about... I don't know if she's talking about you, Harriet.
No.
I would hope not. You're not an ugly... Give me a couple of minutes.
Stop it, John. Morning. It is hump day, Wednesday, middle of the week. Cock-a-doodle, yes.
Got the disco coming up tonight, which I've been banned from, of course.
The school disco.
You've been banned from every part of their weekend.
How long were you engaged when you got married?
We weren't. We just did it for a dab.
I've never seen you look more stupid.
But he was there as well.
Oh,
a double whammy. BBC London 94.9, a fresh perspective. And I tell you what.
I could see all of your faces through that. And there was lots of laughter and smiles. And there is so much stuff to go through of Jono's. That was really tough to put together. But I think it's fair to say that it was a real good example of a guy who literally didn't give a monkey's about the mechanics of what we were there to do. He just wanted to make you laugh. Eri, anything there what did you think when you saw that? Anything there that made you kind
just of... Just smiles, the irreverence, the silliness. Jono used to set me off. I can't remember the circumstance exactly. We were in the middle of a link and Jono's tummy rumbled. And he went, my Ewok's in the studio, and carried on. I laughed for 20 minutes. I giggled. There were tears running around my face. It didn't have to be a set-up joke with Jono. It didn't have to be something planned. It didn't have to be something very clever and written. Jono could make absolutely anything funny. And just listening back to those examples, their Wednesdays will always be hump day Wednesdays. I will be knocking that naughty clock for the rest of my days. So many little catchphrases that of Jono's that I just carry with me all the time. And silly things will happen in my day-to-day life and my brain will go, ping, Jono, Jono's back in my head. Such a huge part of all our lives and all our time on radio, without a doubt.
Joe, you the bits we had there in that was from the promo that you shot for Jono joining you.
Yes.
I can imagine there was lots of putting people at ease and lots of laughter.
Oh my gosh. I mean, can you imagine? He comes into a BBC newsroom where usually on a breakfast show, there's a running order. We're meant to do local news and cutting news and breaking news. And then there's Jono. There is no running order. All he ever brought in with him was the birthdays from the Star News. He pulled it into four and he was right with this. He would ring his mum at six during the news and I'd be thinking, oh my God, come on, Jono. All right, Syl, I'll talk to you later. And then he'd be ready. Just all those comments to Erica and Harriet. I mean, if you look back at now, today, you just think, could he ever get away with that? It was so inoffensive. none of us were offended because the child was always present. You know, the wife, his family values. You couldn't take offence. It was ridiculous.
It's funny you mentioned the celebrity birthdays because I think for all of us, our hearts sunk for a moment there when you mentioned those because it was as the producer, it was the bane of my life because you'd have this amazing thing queued up and you go, just got to do the celebrity birthdays, mate. And it's like, no one cares that it's Jim Gray Scott's birthday today. We've got this amazing guest coming up. We've got to do it, mate. And I remember the year, it was one of the years where it was a leap year. So, and as we know, Jono is a 29th baby. And he was, and so we managed to call up the Daily Star where he had his column and got him in celebrity birthdays. So of course that day he went, got to do the celebrity birthdays, and he's like, it's my birthday, it says it here, which was brilliant. Russ, there was some video there of you running around dressed as bananas and nuts,
yeah.
Big contest to give away cash. Memories of that day.
To be fair to Virgin, they actually did spend some money promoting us, and I remember that was a whole day of shooting with directors going, can you just do it again, guys? And but it was a lot of fun, and the adverts are still remembered. And you've obviously managed to dig them up as well, Nick. On the subject of Russ and Jono commercials, we were asked to do a nude shoot, which, funny enough, never made it onto that video. And we were both photographed nude with little stars over our private parts. Mine had 105. And his had 0.8 for the FM frequency for London. And so they thought there was going to be a real wheeze that we get this giant poster up by the Hammersmith flyover. So everyone commuting into London would be able to see Russ and Jono naked-ish. So all the photos were done. It was another long day in the studio, but we always had a laugh, as you can imagine. And about a week and a half later, David Campbell, the occasionally grumpy boss of Virgin Radio, quite often he was in a good mood if he'd had a couple, he said, guys, the nude photo shoot, unfortunately, as good as it was, the Advertising Standards Authority have rejected it on the basis that they feel that the physical appearance of Jono will be distracting for drivers. And there is one Polaroid left, and Nick has got it in his hands right now, so you can all enjoy it. But just brilliant memories of messing around and doing stuff that we could never do today.
I think we've established how important Jono was to the five of us here today and millions of listeners in the UK. But between 1979 and 1990, the year he came to the UK, Jono was a massive star in his adopted homeland of Australia. Adopted because he was born in Hackney in the 50s and headed to Australia in the 60s as a £10 pom. There, he found fame on a national daily TV show for kids, but by the early 80s, he was one half of Australia's most memorable and biggest partnerships of the day. Still remembered today, Jono and Dano. Ian Dano Rogerson was Jono's partner on radio and TV for almost a decade. And I spoke to Dano earlier today to understand just how big Jono was down under. But first up, Dano had an interesting take on their super successful partnership.
I always used to refer to myself as one third of Jono and Dano for many different reasons. Let's not go into them right now, but in many ways I was. I knew the man for 40 years and I found him a complete troublemaker all that period of time. And he never let me down.
You were never far from being at the front with Jono, were you? When you were together, I certainly found that as well. Listen, I mean, I'd love you to explain to us here in the UK just how big a deal Jono was in Australia, both before him coming to the UK in 1990, and then after those 16 years when he came back, because you guys picked up your relationship again, didn't you?
Oh, well, it never really went away. In a bizarre sort of way, Johnny, while he was in England, would always turn up in Australia at Christmas. And it'd be like Santa Claus arriving at the front door. There'd be a knock on the door and it'd be, who's this? Coleman, what the hell? What the hell are you doing here? He'd be arriving and then the family would grow over the years. You know, that's the beautiful thing. I mean, Johnny and Margot had Oscar and Emily and they'd come back at Christmas and we'd all get on like a house on fire because we were basically friends. So we'd known each other for a long, long period of time. And I think the beautiful thing about it was that none of that ever really went away. We were always very good mates.
And so tell us, over those years, 40 years, you say, you knew each other. But professionally, you were the equivalent, over here, if I was to say, the equivalent of Anton Deck, of Sir Terry Wogan, of Chris Tarrant. That was your star was huge, wasn't it?
Well, it had very humble beginnings. I remember 40 years ago, at the ABC, which is like the BBC with slightly different lettering, and we were put together, and I'd been working at Triple J, the youth network sent up here in Australia, for about 6 months. And then and Johnny was actually a bit of a star then because he was working for a show called Wonderworld, which is sort of like a magazine show that was running every afternoon at 4 o'clock. And so I was working there and they brought Johnny into the office and said, I want you to, the powers that be said, I want you to panel for Johnny on a Saturday night. We're going to give him a trial and see how he goes on the radio. And so, of course, that's what happened the next night on the Saturday night. And I was supposed to be the panel operator, and it lasted about 15 minutes, I'd say, before I had to say something. And he was an ebullient, funny, silly, ridiculous man who had exactly the same sense of humour as I did. And we worked with some fabulous, fabulous comedians and producers at the ABC. And basically the whole thing took off from there.
And then you ended up on primetime telly, didn't you? You did a late night show, then you did Saturday morning. So again, different and a new audience probably on both of those shows that weren't necessarily listening to you on the radio. Is that right?
Well, that's right. I mean, Johnny and I worked at radio stations. We got number one. We did really well. Let's just say we did ridiculously well. And then one thing led to another. And, we got fired from a few radio stations. We got hired from a few radio stations. And it was just this juggernaut because it was the 80s as well, which the beautiful mixture of sense of fun and great music and just the liberation that the 1980s, I think, had in Sydney, Australia and around Australia, everything got unleashed and one thing led to another. And then basically we had 10 years of ludicrously good fun. We were doing outside broadcasts. We'd have television shows. We were at Expo. We had concerts. We did silly, silly things for many, many years. We were both professional idiots, paid ludicrously well for what we were doing, and then got spat out in about 1989. and that's when Johnny decided, I'm going to England. And then he came back here. I think I can fill in the bits. As one of Johnny's radio partners, and he had many different partners over the years, I think I can fill in the bits before and after. And then he came back here and did a lot of radio. Him and I got back together for a period of time in 2010. 11 or 12, we got a couple of years out of that. When we came back to England at about that time for the royal wedding, very serious, working for the Twinings. Christopher Twinings is a lovely man and we still owe him for meals. I know that. Probably owe him $10 somewhere along the line, I'm sure. But we had a lovely time. And that's where I realized, for me, I realized how much of a career Johnny had had in London, which I hadn't realized before. Because you'd get into cabs, and it'd be the cab driver would go, "Oh, Johnno, what are you doing here, mate?" And I realized it had been a number of years, but they still all knew him and loved him. And I think he had that great touch, you know. People, once they got to know him, believed it was genuine, and they stayed friends. Right. I've got a photo, one photo.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's have a look at that. What's that there? Show me, tell me.
This is in my lounge room. And this is us in about 1985. We were doing the breakfast show at a station in Sydney. And that's the Today Show. That's the American Today Show, NBC. Oh. Willard Scott, oh, yeah. Bryant Gumbel, Jane Pauley. And wow. We were having lunch with them. This is what, and you'd understand this, Nick. It'd start off in the radio studio, and then you'd find yourself having lunch somewhere later on.
Dano / Ian, man, it's been great talking to you today, hearing your memories and how important Jono was to you and how important and how huge your stars were in Australia. So from us here in the UK, again, many condolences and thank you for your time this morning / this evening.
Nick, as they say in the classics, away we go now, really.
I'm here today celebrating Jono with four of his former UK radio co-hosts, Russ Williams, Erica North, Harriet Scott, Joe Good. We heard there about the size of Jono's star in Australia. Erica, 21 years ago to this time, yep. I calculated it last night, yep. You went to Australia to the Sydney Olympics to broadcast with Jono. So you saw that huge Australian star factor in action, didn't you?
I'm genuinely not kidding you guys. And we all heard the line, didn't we? Harriet's heard it, Joe's heard it, Russ heard it, you heard it, Nick, a million times. I'm big down under. And the number of times we just went, yeah, 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 we know, we know, we know. It was the standard thing that was rolled out. And obviously the Olympics that year were in Sydney. We were actually the only British media allowed to stay in the team hotel, which was a real lifetime experience. Let me tell you, lying next to Olympian on a sun lounger, really not good for your ego. But anyway, we flew in. We got upgraded on Qantas because, of course, you're flying with Jono Coleman on the Australian airline, the national airline. You're going to get upgraded. And we were standing there at the front of first class, having joked all the way over about this ridiculous thing. Oh, we know you're big down under. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just a line. The door opened, the undercarriage went up, and literally there was a chap standing the other side to make sure the plane was connected to the tunnel. He looked up. Jono and I were at the front of the queue. He clocked Jono. He went, "Oh, no, Jono Coleman, mate, Jono, it's Jono. Oh, my God, mate, it's Jono." Calling down the tunnel. By this point, people backing up from economy class on the aircraft were all hearing these shouts because there was such excitement. There was excitement on the plane with people going, "Jono, really?" Trying to get a little shot and a little view. By the time we got to baggage claim, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. There was a crowd of around 50 people queuing up to get Jono's autographs. And I was literally standing back there with, we had engineers flying with us, Dave Walters, who the Heart people obviously worked with, and people had traveled with us to make the show happen. Literally standing back at the back of this crowd going, "Oh, he really wasn't kidding. This is huge. I've never seen anything like it." And Jono, just being Jono, it's the middle of the night, but he's got time for everybody. He's joking. He's working the room. He came to life even after a 20-odd hour flight. Jono literally lit up. And there he was entertaining these people, knowing that they were going to tell this story about meeting Jono Coleman for years to come and wanting to give them a good memory. And that was my first experience of Jono in Australia. And it just followed him around wherever he went, to restaurants, to doing OBs on beaches, in shopping arcades. That just followed him around, because you go to Australia with Jono, that's it. You're a little bit famous too, because you're the person standing behind Jono. It was just incredible. I've never seen anything like it or about anybody anywhere else before.
Russ, you did your fair share of OBs,
oh, yeah.
Jono, didn't you?
The one that sticks out for three very quick reasons was when they decided to dispatch the Russ and Jono show with Tim Gibson sorting it all out, Trev the Hippie producer. We went to Disneyland in Paris for the launch of Space Mountain. But on that show, one of the funniest things that ever happened, we had the Germans next to us from a German commercial station that was from all over Europe. There was different radio stations. We're all in the same area. We've taken some listeners there. and Jono liked to, in a Stan Boardman kind of way, have fun about the Germans in generally, but he was of a certain age. And there was banter between us while we're doing the show, much of which I think bemused them. And then Jono decided in one of the links, live on the air, that he would take some Russ and Jono car stickers over to the Germans when they happened to be live on the air as well. So he went over Jonathan Coleman, Russ and Jono show, UK's number one breakfast show, you know, all the stuff that he would come out with. And he said, I want to give you guys Russ and Jono car stickers for your Volkswagens. And they went, ah, yeah, thank you very much. This is on the air. And just after leaving a breath, he said, I don't suppose you guys have got any of those SWAS stickers for us, have you? And the place erupted. And it remains, as inappropriate as it may be today, one of my funniest memories of our life on the road.
The man had no shame, and I think that was a positive thing. I say that in a positive way. You talk about your awards. I think, you know, I'm really proud of this moment in life when we won a Sony, and it was the year we also won... There's Harry's one there. And it was the year also, Erica, wasn't it, where we won the Station of the Year.
We won Station of the Year, absolutely, which was a huge moment of pride for all of us. Those things in life you never forget. Jono was very kind at also thanking the team. I've got a couple of memories behind me. This was something when Jono was given the Red Book in Australia. To those of us who are old enough to remember, This Is Your Life, a huge show in the United Kingdom. So it was really exciting when This Is Your Life production team got in touch with us on Heart Breakfast and asked the morning crew if they could surprise him with the Red Book live on air during a show. So we had the Australian comedian Mark Little in this picture with the bright shirt on, shocking Jono with the Red Book. Jono didn't get it. He didn't realise it was for him. He thought it was Mark Little who they were surprising with the Red Book. So that was a great moment of excitement and pride that I was part of the show that morning. We laughed about that. And I got to sit in the audience. They filmed it at Teddington Studios in the UK because it was too expensive to fly Jono and all his family back to Australia for it. So they recorded it here and flew Dano and a few luminaries from Jono's life in Australia over here. So I got to meet everyone and sit on the little famous This Is Your Life, the little curved seating area they had in between, you know, who was hosting it that year. That's the Australian presenter of This Is Your Life.
Harriet, if I can just change tacks at the moment, you sort of came in under a bit of a spotlight onto the programme and you sort of had a bit of time to prove yourself, didn't you? How was that, and how did Jono make you feel through that?
So I was already on Heart doing weekend shows, and then you guys needed a new presenter quickly, and I was told, right, you're on the show from Monday, but I've never met Jono before. And I was told by Francis Curry, look, don't be hurt if you see other people come through. We will audition other people, but you get in there and see how it goes. And I was obviously a bit nervous about joining a show. I'd never done this kind of been part of a breakfast show like this before, but there was no time to prep. It was a live rehearsal. That's what it was. And I would have got in plenty of time, obviously. And literally, I mean, as the news jingle's firing, in comes this whirlwind and just massive, massive grin. And he just looks at me and he goes, watch and learn, darling, watch and learn. Like, you sit down. Then Nick tells him where to go. Producer Posh also tells him where to go and chastises him for being late, as usual. And he sort of sat down. And I had an absolutely wonderful time. Couldn't wipe the smile off my face. And anyhow, I was very lucky. About 2 months later, I think it was a long 2 months, I got the call saying, it's all right, we're not auditioning anybody else, you can have the job. So it was unbelievable.
Great.
I just think what we get to hear is we've heard from ourselves about this, but a week or so ago we put a request out for memories and stories from the Radio Academy members and on social media for stories about Jono. As we've already understood, he touched so many people, but just having a good time and making them laugh, and none more so than the big cheeses he worked for. We received this from the two men behind Chrysalis Radio, real proper residents of Mahogany Row, as Jono would have called it. Chrysalis's chairman, founder and owner Chris Wright, and Chrysalis Radio's CEO of the time, Phil Riley.
Jono, terribly sad news. I know the whole radio industry feels feels terrible about the loss of such a great guy. I was thinking back and went and checked some numbers, and I don't know whether you remember yourself, Chris. In 98, we'd been on air in London for 3-4 years, and we'd done okay, but we weren't number one. In fact, checking the numbers, we had about a 4% market share, and Capital still had 12. So we were still miles behind them. And we took actually quite a brave decision, didn't we, to go and hire somebody who was a name from outside the radio station and put a celebrity, you know, presenter on. And do you remember the decision behind that and what we thought about it?
Yeah, I mean, he'd been successful with the Russ and Jono show, so, you know, we were going for a name and a change of direction, and we came up with really a winning formula and a great guy.
Yeah, I can remember that we decided to spend a fair bit of money on marketing Jono, and we had pictures of Jono. I don't remember the poster of Jono in his pajamas.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and it was sort of quite a different thing for us, because up until then we'd marketed the music, the fact that we were playing this different music, and suddenly we were going, you know, in a whole new direction, marketing a personality, and that was a big, in a way, it was a big risk for us, I think, as a station at the time.
Yeah, I guess for a breakfast show, you need more than just music. And I think we probably came to that realization and then found the right ingredients.
We did. And to be fair to Jono, looking back at the numbers over that period from 98 through till 2004, our market share almost doubled from 4 to 7. Capitals came down from 12 to 6. And we overtook them and went to number one, you know, during Jono's tenure. So, you know, hats off to him from a professional perspective for being the spearhead of that great period of growth for us.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about Jono is that he was an Australian who came to England, made it in England, then went back to Australia and made it again in Australia. So, you know, his passing would be very deeply felt by people in both the UK and Australia in equal numbers, really. And it's very unlikely you get something like that. I mean, somebody that comes from Australia to England or vice versa, they normally leave their reputation behind when they go. But with Jono, he was just as much loved over here as he was down under.
Yeah, now, we all remember him as this great guy and the bonhomie and always a laugh and a joke. But you had a deeper relationship with him, didn't you, over time? I mean, you became...
Well, I did. I mean, I used to have lunches with him in London. I'm not quite sure why, because, I mean, it wasn't like just like a business thing. Hey, you better take Jono out for lunch or something. We just did. And I invited him to a few things. And I think he came to a few private parties of mine and that kind of thing. So, you know, because I just enjoyed his company. And then I like to go to Australia every year. Obviously, it hasn't been possible during the pandemic. And he would always be someone that I would... call as soon as I got to Sydney, and we would always hang out a little bit together, and he was just such great company. And you know, we had so many things, you were never lost for anything to talk about. You know, the conversation just rolled easily. And of course I will remember the last time we did have lunch, or actually I think it was a brunch up in Palm Beach, that on my last trip there. It's so sad. You know, guys like that are hard to find, you know, and it's, you know, it's such a tragedy that he's no longer around.
One of a kind. And, you know, the expression larger than life was almost designed for Jono, wasn't it, in so many ways?
Yeah, I mean, he was larger than life. He was like a big cuddly bear. And he was one of life's naturally funny people. There are a few people like that that can basically, you know, they walk into a room, sit down at the table and you start laughing before they even open their mouths.
Yeah. Well, he'll be missed by us all, won't he?
He'll be missed by us all, and he'll certainly. I mean, I if I was about to go to Australia, I'd be missing him enormously, because it's just very sad that, you know, he's not going to be like that first phone call when I get off the plane, and you know, the lunches and dinners that we had together. It was, you know, you can't replace it, really.
Yeah. Well, I'll love to Marva and the family. Yeah.
Lovely tribute there from his two bosses at Chrysalis. Of course, Phil brought up the numbers there, and that it was a numbers game in commercial world. And I do remember one time in one of our regular debriefs after the breakfast show, a new member of management thought that they would take the debrief, and they chose a half an hour in the show. Eri, I think you might have remembered this. And the person we're talking about went, so in that half hour, there was about 68% of speech as opposed to music. And Jono, literally, really did we all see him lose his temper? But when you did, my God, and he literally bashed the table. He went, well, it's not enough. And he got up and walked out. And he went. And he got in his car and he went home.
I remember. I remember.
And it's just like, my God, okay, you know, he got the beast, but he knew how he had to do it, and you did it, you know, his way. And he was aware that sometimes that would work and sometimes it would be the end of that and move on to the next thing. Russ, you also had a very, very well-known owner, boss, who's currently, you know, playing in space.
I think he's terra firma now, Nick. I think he's actually back down here now,
although he's probably head still up there. How were your comings together with him, with Jono? And you reached out to him recently, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I'll just move our gotcha Oscar, by the way, that Noel Edmonds and Jeremy Clarkson and myself got. That's when he said to me, incidentally, Jono, he said, Russ, the reason we've got a gotcha is we're world class, we're kicking ass. And I said, you're quite right. When we first started out, Richard Branson was very nervous about Virgin Radio. It was a big deal. And he used to come in and read the Financial Times in the studio with Jono and myself. And so Jono decided it would be a good idea that, well, I don't care if you're Richard Branson and you own us, you can read some traffic news out, do the weather. So that was our first relationship with Richard. We famously went on an open-top bus around London and ended up at his house in Holland Park signing our new contracts. So, you know, he was a fan of the show, but he blew whichever way he could. And when Chris Evans became available, he blew that way, much to the annoyance of Jono. Another moment, incidentally, where I saw him lose his temper nearly. But fortunately, he didn't hit anyone. But he had a great relationship with Richard, as did I. And I occasionally have had reason to email Richard over the last 5 years, and I knowing that he was busy in space like you are, I sent him the very sad news and just said, would you like to, because we were doing this video podcast as tribute to our mate. And yesterday evening I had a short reply, and I'll read it to you. It says, I can distinctly remember walking into Virgin Radio all those years ago and meeting Jono, who was a larger-than-life character who made everybody laugh. There's a common theme here, isn't it? Smile and be happy. An extraordinary person. Big hugs to his family. Much love, Richard Branson and family. So thank you to Richard, who actually was a great boss as well, when he wanted to be a boss.
Jono and authority figures actually did mix when you never thought they would. I remember in that last show, I don't know if you remember the last show, Harriet, but we managed to get Tony Blair on the phone. However, 10 minutes before, we had John Coleshaw doing an impression of George W. Bush, the president at the time. So we rushed to get Tony Blair on because it was all kind of, he'll call when he can. And it was typically 2 minutes before the news. And Jono, he came off, I remember, we went, Jono, need to go to line five, need to go to line five. He's still got George W. Bush ringing in his ears. I've got celebrity birthdays to do. Literally, he threw them in then, right? And we're going, yes, okay. And then we went, okay, line five. And it was Tony Blair. And Tony Blair was there, and Jono didn't quite believe it. Jono was like, is that John Coleshaw again? No, John, stop messing about. And it was. And Tony Blair was like, no, this is Tony Blair. I'm in a car. And Jono was, no, it's not. No, it was like one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, this is the moment. This is the moment when it could end for us all. But luckily, Jono realised and pulled it around. Anyway, Tony Blair the other day sent a message also that I will read it now. I was so sorry to hear of the news about Jono. He was larger than life character of wit, insight and immense capacity to make people laugh and think at the same time. I remember doing shows with him back in the day when I was PM and he was at Virgin Radio and Heart. They were always fun, but issues were dealt with intelligently, and the heart was one of gold. To Margot, Oscar and Emily, I send my deepest condolences, but also my gratitude for having been able to know Jono and to admire what he did to make the world better and happier. Not many people get that, do they? Joe, he came from commercial radio to the BBC. How did he mix with the management there? Because he ribbed them a good old going over at in commercial world. Were they slightly distant, or did they not know what they'd taken on?
They really didn't know what they'd taken on. And also, I was a bit put out because Danny Baker had gone quite famously, and I'd got Danny Baker's breakfast show, and I was thinking, I'm doing quite well. And then they said, you know, we're going to bring Jono in. And I was like, well, why? I'm doing, like, can't Jono have another gig? You know, this is Jono Coleman. He only does breakfast, basically. So he comes in. I think the execs were scratching their heads because, as I said earlier, usually the breakfast show would have a running order of news, a mix of local, national news, and that just didn't happen. You know, it was celebrity birthdays, and then it was just literally hysteria with celebrities chucked in, whoever. I mean, someone said if Kylie was around, In Excess around, anyone was in town, they'd come in, they'd hunt out Jono, they'd come on our show. And he won the BBC over. I mean, he was literally like nothing they'd ever, you know, certainly on my radio station, they'd had Danny, yes, but he was nothing like, he loved Danny, actually, and Danny loved him. They were quite similar in that they were untamable. But yeah, the BBC was scratching their heads, and within a year we'd won this award, which, unlike the rest of you, I don't have, because he stole it the night we won it. Ah. He went to Australia and I've never seen it.
Harriet, when you were on the show, the booking people from all the movie companies and the pop stars, it just went bonkers. And I remember we would record one or two interviews a day after the show. So mixing with the people that Jono dreamed of mixing with. Any recollections from some of those interviews?
Oh, God, it was extraordinary. Do you know what really rings a bell is when we went to, when we interviewed Michael Schumacher, and that wasn't in the studio. Remember when we went to the Grand Prix?
Yes.
Now, we went to the Grand Prix. I mean, this was just a jolly on a Sunday afternoon, but we obviously took recording kit with us, Nick, Ever the producer. We went with Simon Viger, Gemma Fordham, Gemma O'Neill, as she was then. She's now massive in Australian radio. We went there, but I don't know, to watch the Grand Prix, to have a few drinks. And then there came the moment when Michael Schumacher came to the VIP area that we were at to schmooze and to be asked a few questions. And Jono was asking him some questions. Now, I don't think between us, Jono and myself, not the most sporty people and not really well equipped with all the right questions. I used to heckle each other that if we ever had a celebrity guest and we'd run out of questions, we'd say, ever fallen down a hole? And that would be the code for I'm done. It was just basically, let's get ludicrous and then just finish up the interview. And obviously Michael Schumacher, you know, very straight guy, and Jono's there. I've had a few drinks. I'm heckling from the back. I don't know why. Was I interviewing him as well? I must have been. I don't remember. We're all pissed. There was a point when Jono is standing there with a very serious Michael Schumacher, and he goes, ever fallen down a hole? And the whole place went quiet. I mean, it just went absolutely silent. And it was just like, oh, Jesus. I felt so guilty that I pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. I mean, it's a taste of his own medicine. He'd have done it to us.
Right. And let's just take a moment to hear from some other people and their reflections and memories from working or knowing Jono.
Such sad news about funny, eccentric, bouncing man who was, I think, one of the very first Aussies to interview me when I arrived in Oz for the first time many, many years ago. The SCG, I think it was. He was funny, endearing, daft as a brush, as they say in Yorkshire, and he became a mate, a good mate too. And I want him to know that all the Parkinsons are thinking of him.
So the first time I met Jono was at the auditions for Virgin Radio about 3 months before it started. I'd come from Hong Kong, he'd probably come from Australia. We just met and I admired his confidence. I was all kind of nervous and scared that I wouldn't get the job. But Jono just breezed in, did 5 minutes, and I said, right, bugger that, mate, that's all they're getting. And I liked him from that moment. And we worked together at Virgin when Russ was away. I'd sit in for Russ and do the breakfast show with Jono. And you know what? We laughed for about 3 hours solidly. You can never shut him up, of course. I used to play a record to stop him waffling. But at the end of the show, instead of having anything boring like a meeting or a planning for tomorrow, we'd go to a Soho cafe stroke wine bar. And the waiter would say, would you gentlemen like some coffee? And Jono would say, nah, mate, bring us a bottle of Polly if you may. And yeah, I remember that. We'd always get pissed at 10:15 in the morning and laugh more, which was great. It was good being on the planet with you, Jono. Made me laugh.
Jono, I'm holding my mug just for you. That's what he used to say. Never put your mug down. Sage advice, too. Still makes me laugh. Because in this business, he said, you never know when they're going to fire you. Therefore, if you're always holding your mug in the air, you can leave the building at a moment's notice without having to get your stuff. He's right, too. When I first spoke to Jono, I'd just been taken off Heart Breakfast. Chris Evans had bought Virgin, put himself on breakfast there. Jono was out of work for 5 minutes and came over to Heart. And I called him up and I said, good luck. I hope he goes all right in the morning, the night before his first show. And I told him he'd ruined my life. And we had a laugh about it. And he was very funny and generous and kind too. What was a difficult time for me. And I'll never forget that. And I went to Sydney in 2013, called him up and he invited my family over. We had a lovely afternoon with Margot and Jono and the family. And Christmas Eve that year, he was hosting Lates with Dano on 2UE, and it was a huge privilege to go in and join them for an hour on the show. Jono, you'll be hugely missed by many, many people. And wherever you are, my friend, hold on to that mug. Don't ever put it down.
Jono Coleman was a very naughty man, and that's why we all loved him, of course. Hello, I'm Simon Feiger. I read the news on Heart Breakfast with Jono and Harriet for a couple of years, and God, did we laugh. Not during the news bulletin, though. They would be very naughty and tell a joke just before the jingle, and then I would literally have to shield my eyes, because I knew they were in the corner of the studio rocking in silent laughter. But they never got me. Well, maybe once they did. Jono was one of the funniest, one of the kindest men I have ever worked with. And I think we were all very lucky in British radio to have had him as long as we did.
Jono was hilarious, and I wouldn't say self-deprecating was his middle name. He was full of confidence. But I'll never forget how he looked one day when he came back from attending a reception at Buckingham Palace. He was slightly pale and a little bit deflated, and he said he just couldn't believe it because as soon as he saw the Queen, he yelled at the top of his voice, "Happy birthday, Your Majesty, from everybody in Australia!" And he didn't know why he'd done it. It wasn't the Queen's birthday. He wasn't a representative of everyone in Australia. He was absolutely horrified. It's the only time I saw his confidence minutely diminish. He was great fun.
So I was lucky enough to work with Jono at Heart in London. In fact, we had breakfast together most days after the show with the rest of the crew. And when I think of Jono, I think of lots of things, but two in particular stick in my mind. The first is just how much he wanted everybody to have fun, whether it was the production team, the management team, whether it was fellow celebrities, listeners, members of the public, other colleagues. He just wanted to make sure everybody had fun. And the other thing is, he loved his work. He loved his celebrity status, but more than anything, it was quite clear how much he loved his family more than anything else. He was proud of Margot, Oscar, Emily, and was always talking about the things they were doing and how proud he was of them. He absolutely loved being a family man.
In the world of broadcasting and in real life, Jono Coleman will be greatly missed. A warm, friendlier guy you couldn't hope to meet, genuine interest in stuff that you were saying, a great conversationalist in real life and as a broadcaster. And he would always bring out the best, for example, in his radio of the co-hosts or anybody he was working with. And, you know, one of the great things I liked about Jono was he kind of had a little, it wasn't a smirk, it was a Mickey Taker's look on his face. So when you spoke to him, you knew that he was lightly sending you up. Or you were being playful with him, he was being playful with you. He was just one of those guys, didn't take life seriously, but did at the same time. What do you think, Tim?
I think you're absolutely right. The thing for me about Jono is he was just a lovely bloke who was always a joy to bump into, especially when he was wearing his Aussie board shorts, which seemed to be most of the time. Funny thing for me was I'd gone to Australia in 1988 just to travel around and see a bit of the country, and I'd remembered seeing this guy on TV called Jonathan Coleman, because he was a big star in Australia at the time, both on TV and radio. Forward to 1991, and suddenly I'm co-presenting programmes with him for BBC Greater London Radio. So it was a huge thrill for me. He was a delight, and over the years, our paths crossed occasionally, both professionally and personally. And he was always the same. He was very funny, he was very warm, always friendly, and as I think you sort of hinted at earlier, absolutely passionate about broadcasting and about what he did. And my thoughts go out to his family. He's going to be greatly missed in so many ways by so many people.
So, you know, an incredible guy. Jono, you will be greatly missed.
Wow. Look, thank you for all of the messages that came through. Clearly, Jono touched so many people in so many ways. All legally, of course. You heard there broadcasting legend Sir Michael Parkinson, Mitch Johnson, former Virgin Radio presenter with Jono, David Prever, former Heart Breakfast presenter, Simon Weiger, who was Jono and Harriet's newsreader for a few years, Vanessa Phelps from Radio 2 and Radio London, Francis Curry, Jono's former Heart PD and now a consultant, and Steve Wright and Tim Smith from Steve Wright in the Afternoon on BBC Radio 2. Now, look, before we go, because we're running out of time, because we've been doing this for ages and it's great, I'm going to go around the table, ask for one more memory, one more story from each of you, please, before we say goodbye. So we'll go chronologically. Russ, you first.
Okay. I'll miss him like mad. Like we all do, we can't pick up the phone. Touched that he was in my life, had so much fun with him. But there's one story that I think underlines just what a wonderful character and warm person Jonathan Coleman was. We had been to the Legends of the Fall, the Sir Anthony Hopkins movie. About 2 weeks later, we went to Canaletto's for breakfast on Beak Street. No longer exists because the rents are too high and what have you. But Fabrizio, the mad Italian, he ran it. Hello, boys, come in. And so we looked over to where we were going to sit, and on the double table behind was Sir Anthony Hopkins. Jono ordered his food, so did I, rushed over Jonathan Coleman, Sir Anthony. We'd seen the movie, fantastic, such a great honour to meet you. There was a rather bemused-looking companion with him. Sir Anthony was extremely gracious. We sat down at our table. There was a little bit of banter. Sir Anthony warmed up a little bit, and that was it. We said goodbye. The next day, we went into Canaletto's. Lo and behold, Sir Anthony's sitting there again with the same guy. And as we walked in, he went, gentlemen, come and join us for breakfast. And we had breakfast with Sir Anthony Hopkins. And that was purely down to Jono being Jono and being such a likable guy. And that's a story that for me is memorable, yes, but it just sums him up and how he affected normal listeners in such a positive way, even some of his bosses and even international megastars.
Erica.
Wow, I don't know how to follow that. But I'm actually going to tell a story about what happened on a show I moved on to after working with Jono, only to demonstrate the one thing I took from working with Jono and the one thing I hope I take wherever I go is Jono's ability. He didn't matter when he made people laugh, if you were laughing at him or laughing with him, because he realised if you were laughing at him, it probably meant he'd made a deeper connection with you because it was something embarrassing that we'd all experienced as human beings anyway. And he really broke down the barriers for me of you can laugh at anything if you've got the ability to laugh at yourself and take yourself out of it. And it was just after I'd finished working with Jono. It was in the Heart 106.2 building, and I'd been to Covent Garden that morning. It was a spring morning. The birds were singing. I was feeling a bit like Mary Poppins. Spring had arrived. It was a wonderful day. And a homeless person was sitting outside the tube station and they asked me for some money. And as I say, it was a lovely, lovely day. And I said, absolutely not a problem. And I bent down and was very generous, gave them £5 or £10, whatever I had in my purse. And as I stood up to walk away, the gentleman stood up and he said, can I pay you a compliment, please? And I said, of course you can. Absolutely not. Why not? I'd love to receive a compliment from you. And he said, I do find it very attractive when women let their facial hair grow. At which point, I was completely shocked to bits. I was completely flabbergasted. And of course, I thought in my mind, well, I'm never going to tell this story on the radio because this is ghastly. This is so embarrassing. It's outing me as having a little bit of a girly moustache. And I got to the radio station that day and I was thinking about it on the tube going back to Holland Park where the studios were. And I thought, what would Jono do in this situation? Jono would absolutely turn it around and use this as material for the show because he didn't mind if people were laughing at him because he knew that by doing that, he was just making them smile and making them laugh. And so thank you, Jono, for being the reason that I then shared that piece on air that day. And then when we were nominated for a Sony Award and at the awards ceremony, as you know, at the Grosvenor House Hotel, very, very swanky, they play out a little bit of the show that you've been nominated for. And what did the bosses submit? And you probably had a part in this, Nick. They submitted the bit with me admitting I'd been complimented on the fact I let my facial hair grow. And then it cut out. And I was looking around the room at everybody laughing, thinking, oh my goodness, if this is this what I'm going to be remembered for? And even retelling it now, I'm thinking, why am I doing it again? But thank you, Jono, for making me see it's never a bad thing as long as people are laughing with you for whatever reason. Thank you, mate. I love you to bits, and like, you will always be with us so much in our hearts.
Lovely. Harriet.
So we won a Sony Gold, which is right there. And I'm part of the Radio Academy, and I know what judges write. And I remember being at the Grosvenor House Hotel when they during the awards ceremony, and sitting there with him. And we're all just on this loud table, and they talk about this. We won Sony Gold for Best Breakfast Show. And they started describing what the judges said, because they do that, and then they say, and the winner is. So you've got what the judges say. Now, I don't remember much of what they said, what the judges say, because I wasn't really listening, thinking, well, it's not going to be us. And then I just remember this thing, and I'm slightly paraphrasing, where it says, da-da-da-da, they make it look easy, but we know it's not. And I think that's the thing. Anyhow, and then they said our names, which is wonderful. But that's the thing about Jono. He made it look easy, and it's not easy. And he was a natural, but he just made it look really easy. The relationship he built with all of us here, and you, Nick, included as a producer, was just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, finally, Joe.
Well, yes, as you know, he lived this high life. He lived in quite palatial residences. When he came back to London, he'd always stay at the Groucho with the kids and Margot. At the Groucho was booked, he'd come back, and there was literally no room at the inn. I live right in the centre of London in Marylebone, but in a tiny, tiny studio flat. And I was having a scene with a guy further down the road. So I said, Jono, have my flat. I'll stay down the road, stay with Margot, because the kids were in Europe. I mean, they had this amazing, this family, they would travel as a unit. The kids were always going off somewhere. I said, you and Margot have my flat. I'll stay down the road. And I get this text the first night that they're staying here from Jono going, mate, there's no ironing board and there's no iron. And I said, no, Jono, I don't iron anything. Just hang it over the bath. Mm-hmm. And he went, no, but it's my shirts. I'm doing TVAM. I'm doing Steve Wright. He had this whole list of people that he was going to. And I went, oh, I don't know, Jono. There's a dry cleaner. Take them there. Anyway, when I came back a week later into my flat, he had left a new iron and this ironing board with Margot and Jono, start ironing your bloody clothes, which was written on it. So that was his legacy to me.
Lovely.
And I can't say any more than any of you have said. It's just he just was a point of reference in my life. He was always a point of reference to just call, smile, email in capital letters. I don't know what I'll do without that.
Mm. Harriet, were you just going to say something?
I was only going to say, Joe, I've been to your flat, but not when you were there, when Jono and Margot were there. They used to have drinks nights. I've been to your flat.
They turned it into a party flat.
Thank you for Sarah sharing some wonderful memories and stories of our lovely friend Jono today. We could go on for ages, but we just don't have the time to. So I think it's very fair to say that Jono Coleman was a good friend to so many in the radio industry, but none more so than those who joined me today. So with that in mind, let's thank Russ Williams, Erica North, Harriet Scott and Joe Good. And then before we go, while many of us mourn the passing of Jono, who touched the lives via the millions and millions of radio listeners in the UK and Australia, his family and friends, as Francis Curry said earlier, meant the world to him. Everyone here in the UK radio and audio industry send our love to his wife Margot and their two amazing children, who all five of us today got to see as they grew up over the years. That's Oscar and Emily, plus his sister Sharon and her family who are based here in the UK. And also, we send our love and best wishes to everyone who knew and loved him in Australia. Our hearts and thoughts are with you all. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening to this special Radio Today podcast from the Radio Academy. If you'd like to see it, with hundreds of pictures of Jono and with the five of us talking face to face, then all you need to do is go to radioacademy.org. It's there available for members. If you're not a member, sign up today and you'll also benefit from a year of great activity coming up from the Radio Academy. So there we go. Thank you very much for your time today. Take care. Goodbye.
of all the DJs that you've ever heard about, like Morgan, Tarrant, Bam Bam, Fox and Bass. There are lots of rubbish DJs over London town, but have you ever heard a DJ that you hate? Hate? A DJ that you positively hate? Well, here he is, John O'Coleman, Jonathan Coleman. Don't you know he eats his food by the crate? He truly is really fat. He ain't no gent, he ain't no scholar, ain't no acrobat. His name is Jonathan Coleman, the radio showman on Heart 106.2. With the one and only, truly original, Jono and the Morning Crew.
Let's see if I can see the clock. Oh, there it is up there. Oh, dearie me. Yes, look at that time. We should knock, knock, knock that naughty clock that says it's time to go. Our time has passed. It goes so fast. And now we'll end our show. And as Russ and Jono always say,
see ya!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.